Thank you. And again, my name is Gary Fielder. I represent Mr. Holzer, the appellant. And should I just begin?
Yep.
The green light is on, and thank you. Your Honors, thank you so much. I don't often ask for oral argument, but there were a couple of subtleties that I knew the court would pick up on, but I thought if I could get 15 minutes in front of the court, I might take advantage of that to explain a little bit of some of the issues, and I really tried to boil them down in my brief. The big issue, and let me just describe one factual situation. When the Department of Homeland Security came to my client's house, among other things, they confiscated a laptop and a sort of a tower drive, a typical computer tower. And the case stemmed around images which were found on the laptop. Now, one of the agents for the Department of Homeland Security said that my client said he was the exclusive user of this laptop, which we, the defense, always disagreed with, that he really said it that way. But the photos that were found on the laptop were the source of the case. Nothing was found on the tower. However, not on the laptop, but on the tower, there were all of these chats. There was 11,000 pages when you printed them of these chats where someone was on that computer, obviously on the tower computer, engaging in these chats in chat rooms that you could engage in with people across the world. And some of the chats were very explicit in nature, and they were talking about children and their own children. And one of the chats said, "This is Jim." My client's name is James or Jim. Didn't mean it was him, it's just one of the chats said that.
Well, it did say, excuse me, counsel, I mean, it did say Jim and a 45-year-old man from Colorado, as I recall, right?
It described Jim Holzer.
I guess my question, just getting right to the heart of it, I do understand your argument, but why doesn't that show, or at least why doesn't it have some relevance to identity? Because it does tie this name, Man for Open Mom or whatever it was, to a Jim who's 45, you know, from Colorado. Well, I mean, why isn't that get you some evidence of identity?
Well, just because, and we're in a whole new realm in talking about these computers, but just because someone says they're Jim, that doesn't mean they're Jim, or
sure,
they're 45, or they're from Colorado.
But it's still right. Some evidence, isn't it?
It is some evidence, but how that chat linked up photos which were on a different computer was the lack of nexus that I argued. Like, once you expose these chats, that would create this prejudice that somebody named Jim, who was 45, looked to be Mr. Holzer on a computer that everybody sort of agreed with wasn't his exclusively. How that evidence could come in to establish that somehow the photos that were on the laptop were either downloaded by him or possessed by him. And I just thought that there was a lack of nexus. So it is a little unusual arguing facts in the Court of Appeals. And I know that there's a de novo standard, but we're still determining whether the trial court abused its discretion. But the big thing for me was that the trial court latched on this idea that somehow the defense had admitted that Mr. Holzer only used the laptop and that the tower was used by him and his daughter. That was all things that the prosecution put into the record. That was in their 404B motion. That was something that an agent for the Department of Homeland Security said, my client said, but I never admitted that. And in fact, at the motions hearing, I specifically advised the court that ID is an issue. We're not admitting to ID. That's something that has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt by the prosecution. So for the court, the trial court, to essentially deny the prosecutor's request because somehow the defense had said only the laptop was ours, but to open up these particular chats, I thought was the error, and it really led me to the waiver of the jury trial.
Mr. Fielder, if I can interrupt, I just want to make sure I'm understanding the facts now myself. So this issue on the chat conversations on the laptop, they were on a website. I forgot the name of the site or this chat site. Was it Free6 or some name like that, I can't remember, but everything, wasn't everything on the same site? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to figure out, I had the impression that, at least from the judge's mind, you tied together Man for Open Mom with this particular website, the chats are on the same website as the photos, and that's how it all tied together. And just so I'm clear.
I don't think that the chats were on the same website.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, the chats weren't on the same website. The chats were just there en masse, and again, there were 11,000 pages of them, of all these chats in different chat rooms, all kinds of different, and different monikers.
But this Man for Mom, or whatever the heck it was, that was the same name used on the website at issue, right?
Was one of the names. There were several passwords or usernames that was used, and that was one of them that was found in the laptop.
So that was, that one was used on both computers, was it not?
It was used on both computers, and that's why it became important for us in the defense. We never said, oh, this is my client's laptop, and only he used it. We never said that. So the idea that if it was only his laptop and there was something found on that, well, then he must have put it on there. That Man for Open Mom must be him. Therefore, it must be him on the tower. But even if it was, I still don't see where those chats were relevant. They just didn't go to a material fact. They weren't logically relevant as far as I was concerned, and they were so heavily prejudicial.
But really only one, the ones involved in Laura UK, was the only one of those 11,000 that actually came into evidence, wasn't it?
It was the only one, but it was a damaging one because it talked about essentially having relationships with children, so it was damaging. But I don't know who that was on that tower. I don't know that was Mr. Holzer. There was no foundation. I objected to everything: hearsay, foundation, prejudicial, so on and so forth. So I really thought that was an abuse of discretion to let that evidence in. And although I don't think it's relevant for our purposes today, it was a visiting judge on the day of the trial. I got to trial, and Judge Cachette had ruled on the previous motion. It was Judge Jack Smith, who I've known for many, many years, and I thought, I'm going to waive the jury. I'm going to go to Judge Smith on this. Because if the chat comes in, and then the photos come in, there's just not a jury in this world that's going to do anything other than convict Mr. Holzer. So I respect the district attorney's objection. But in the end, it was the combination between the graphic nature of the photos, which was more than just, you know, pubescent teenagers, so it was, you know, talking about infant children here. It was the sort of effect, prejudicial in my view, of the chats, and that sort of covering up all of this technical evidence that needed to establish that Mr. Holzer downloaded, possessed knowingly, information on this laptop. So sure enough, it wasn't clear that he was the only user. The agent admitted at trial that that's not exactly what he said. I don't really remember exactly what he said. Basically, he was just saying, that's my computer, that's my laptop, and that's the tower that we kind of use, my daughter and I use. That doesn't mean it was exclusive to visitors, relatives, other children that may be in the house. Who knows? I didn't have an alternative suspect theory. I was just making the prosecutor prove the case. So I thought, let's call the first witness. Let's just waive the jury. What's the prejudice to the prosecutor? It's a fair judge. And that way, I don't have to worry about the prejudicial effect. I could stipulate that obviously those children were under 18 and that that's illegal material. And we could get on to the real substance of the laptop. So I thought it was an abuse of discretion. By this time, it was Judge Smith. To not allow me to waive the jury and proceed. I've heard it said that I don't know what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it. Justice Douglas said that, and obviously when you saw these pictures, they're obscenity beyond anything you can imagine. So I really thought that the overwhelming prejudicial effect of having these photos and this chat room led me to a due process, really a fair trial argument with regard to my waiver of the speedy trial. And then lastly, there was this issue with regard to these two files of animation found on the desktop, meaning when my client flipped up his laptop, something that would be on a desktop, which can have multitudes of files all over your desktop, but these two were found on the desktop. They were not illegal per se, they were not charged, they were animation. And they weren't subject to the 404B before trial. So Judge Smith, the trial judge, allowed this in, and one of the arguments that I thought was not fair was the prosecutor stood up and said that I cut his legs out from underneath him by admitting at the motions hearing that my client exclusively used this laptop. And I did no such thing. I've since got the transcript and it's part of the record. And sure enough, at the motions hearing, I specifically objected to that. So I know I didn't outline it per se in my brief, but I really believed it was prosecutorial misconduct to argue something that I had not argued to Judge Smith, who was not the motions hearing judge, to get these animations and moving pictures of an adult essentially raping or having some sort of interlude with a obviously younger person, although
they were admitted only for the purposes of identity, were they not?
Yes, but again, I don't even know what that means. Purposes of identity. It still was something that they needed to prove Mr. Holzer knew about, and that somehow it connected to knowledge with the other photographs and things that were found on the laptop.
Mr. Field, if I can ask you, and I will tell you, I have some issues with how the animations go to identity, which I'll ask your colleague about in a minute. But I think the government does cite a statement you made. The court says you opened the door and you said, I understand that, or yes. You kind of, it sounded to me like you conceded that you did open the door to that issue. And again, I recognize a cold transcript is hard, but I think their principal argument is you kind of admitted the door was open at that point. How do you read that?
Well, there was no mistake ever alleged. The whole thing was I had admitted that he was the only user first, and now I was sort of changing my story, and so that way this other evidence came in. I think all I was saying was I understand the prosecutor's argument, but I respectfully disagree with it. There was no door opening. ID is the element number one on the jury instructions. They have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. I didn't open up the door to ID. ID had to be proven. And so I didn't understand how these animated files on my client's desktop went to showing ID, but I knew how prejudicial they were. Do I reserve time for a rebuttal?
Sure.
Do I do that? Can I reserve 2 minutes?
Yep.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Majid Yazdi, registration 36043, representing the people in this case. I try to address some specific issues that Mr. Fielder raised, and one of them is the last point about whether there was a question of identity related to the opening up the door for the identity issue. And I have cited on page 16 of my answer brief that in the opening statement, Mr. Fielder stated the evidence is going to indicate somebody else had access to this computer. So this is in conflict with what had been decided and what had been argued prior to the trial, that the laptop was exclusively in the possession of Mr. Holzer. And the basis for that fact finding that the court did were some statements that Mr. Holzer had made at the time of the arrest. Again, I would refer to those statements on page 2 of the answer brief, that Mr. Holzer repeatedly stated that while he and his daughter shared the desktop computer, what Mr. Fielder refers to as the Tower case, he was the only user of the laptop, which was password protected. So based on that, originally the court ruled that all those chats were based, that were based on the laptop were not going to be admitted, which benefited the defendant, exactly because there was no question of who controlled that computer, who had exclusive access, which means there was no question of identity of the person downloading the or uploading, downloading the pictures at issue. Whereas regarding the second computer, the desktop, there was a question of, because it was a shared computer, so there was a question of whether it would be Mr. Holzer or someone else. And the court used that distinction to admit only one chat, which is at issue here for admission under 404B, because in that case, it would help to identify who was the user of that account. And given the same user ID or moniker that was used for that account, that established the link and established the identity of the person who used the desktop for that chat. So the court based its ruling on the facts that were established. The opening statement opened up the door and changed that during the trial. And that is why then the cartoons, animations became relevant, because at that point, it had been opened up to the question of whether there was an identity issue or not.
But can you, I promised I'd ask, so I'll ask Mr. Yazdi, can you, I'm having trouble understanding how these cartoons show identity. They don't match, they don't have his name, there's no moniker on him that I could tell from the brief. How do they tend to show that this was Mr. Holzer? I'm having trouble understanding that.
I think the nature of the material, which is part of the whole evidence that establishes what kind of conversation was going on, what kind of pictures were uploaded or downloaded, it is part of the evidence relating to the activity itself. So it doesn't have to have the necessarily the name of the defendant to relate it to the identity, but it becomes relevant as part of the identity because it is the same nature, the nature of the material.
But how does it show that it was Mr. Holzer? I mean, so now the reason it comes in is now there's a question that maybe the laptop wasn't exclusively used by Mr. Holzer. So now there's, it could be a number of people, including the language that you cited from the opening statement just right a minute ago. And so how does that tell us that it was Mr. Holzer versus somebody else? I mean, that's the court let it in exclusively to show identity. I mean, is your argument just, well, it couldn't possibly, we got all this horrible stuff that we kind of tie to him, and this is also horrible, and it can't be a coincidence, so it must be him? Is that kind of the argument?
We have a situation where we have two potential users of that computer, the daughter and Mr. Holzer, and given the evidence that was presented regarding the other computer, I think it establishes relevance of that to the question of identity. I'm not suggesting that it would conclusively establish the identity, which is, I believe, what Your Honor is really getting into at the heart of the issue. Yes, but we are not talking about conclusively establishing. But as far as the relevance is concerned, I think it is relevant to that question.
Yeah, you are understanding my argument. I would not suggest that it conclusively shows that. I'm frankly having trouble seeing why it's even relevant, how it moves the ball. It's just that it's not a coincidence that this kind of same genre of horrible material is there. Is that the point?
Well, again, I think to the extent that it refutes the alternate suspect theory, because we have two potential users of that computer, and the circumstances of the use of the accounts and all that, the pictures and all the other evidence that was presented, practically shows that the connection is between Mr. Holzer, who was involved in those activities, and this particular file that was admitted. So it definitely is relevant to the negation of the alternate suspect theory, even though it doesn't conclusively establish identity.
So the argument would be, we have pretty good evidence that this is Jim, 45-year-old man from Colorado, on this other computer showing this particular kind of material. And now we have on the laptop similar kind of material, and a reasonable jury could conclude the same person is loading the same material. Is that the argument?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Regarding the question of waiver of jury trial, I think the case law, both in Colorado and precedent established by the U.S. Supreme Court, is clear that a defendant does not have a constitutional right to a bench trial, to waive jury trial. The only circumstance is when a jury trial cannot be achieved based on fair and an impartial jury. And there was no evidence here that that would be the case. So there is no abuse of discretion because the court properly applied the standard established by the U.S. Supreme Court and Colorado case in McKeel, that unless a fair and impartial jury trial cannot be accomplished, then prosecution's objection is valid and the court, based on that, would deny the request for jury trial. Here, the two arguments that were made by Mr. Holzer is that there were some technical information involved and that was too complicated. There's nothing too complicated about the location of files, and as the jury questions indicate, the jury followed the instructions, asked valid questions, and was able to focus on the relevant issues. The second reason is that these pictures were, you know, shocking, inflammatory. Again, compared, as I have argued in the answer, compared to the actual pictures that were before the jury, that they would, there is no ground to say that we have a case that the jury cannot relate to the issue and be inflamed because of that, because the juries have seen all kinds of evidence, and the court, in McKeel, for example, the court points out that if we exclude because there is some drug activity, then no drug case can be argued before the jury. The same argument applies here, that if we say that because the pictures are explicit, then no jury can reach a fair and impartial decision, then no sexual assault case that involves some gruesome or violent nature can be tried to a jury. So that in itself is not a valid ground to deny the prosecution the right to choose that, in this case, a trial jury, which is the preferred method, as stated both in the U.S. Supreme Court in Patton case, in Singer case, and followed in McKeel. Because it is a preferred method, the court simply applied the law, found that there is nothing unusual or unique about this case to make a jury trial unfair, constitutionally speaking, and that was a valid decision.
Can I ask you, Mr. Yazdi, I mean, you just mentioned the Singer case, and I do fully understand your argument. Singer itself said there are some circumstances that might be so compelling that a jury trial would create a denial of an impartial trial. Can you give me an example of where that line is? I mean, I don't think anybody would deny that these facts in this case are horrific. And so if I'm the prosecutor, you betcha I want a jury trial. You betcha it's going to be emotional. Where's the line? What kind of facts fall within that egregious category that Singer talks about? Because I have to say, from your brief, it doesn't sound like there are any facts that would ever fit that category. So could you give me an example of where the line is?
I actually was thinking about this right before coming to the argument, if I could find a case, but unfortunately, I don't have a specific answer. But I agree that it really depends on the specific facts. So if you're looking for some clear lines describing this set of cases would do, probably that would not be found. However, we can, I guess, just hypothesize that there could be cases that are much worse than this case, and maybe in that particular situation, the court would reach a different conclusion. However, given that we are talking about pictures of explicit sexual activities, which is, difficult to deal with, but it doesn't necessarily rise to the level of creating unfair prejudice among the jurors. And one reason for concluding that it was not probably the case here is that we had jurors who responded and during the voir dire, and one juror specifically was removed based on challenge of cause because that particular juror was not able to handle this. But the fact that the other jurors did not express the kind of, you know, uncomfort or, you know, inability to deal with this shows that in this case, we could find a fair and partial, impartial juror.
Thank you.
Unless the court has any question, we ask the court to affirm Mr. Holzer's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a couple of additional thoughts that I wanted to make, and of course I'll answer any questions, but I just wanted to remind the court that at the motions hearing, the parties proceeded by offer of proof, which I was happy to do. So in that sense, I wasn't telling the prosecutor how to try his case, but he didn't call any witnesses. He didn't call the Homeland Security officer to testify about what Mr. Holzer said or didn't say. So in the record and anywhere else, there'll be nothing about me or the defense, me meaning Mr. Holzer's attorney, saying anything about how we agree that Mr. Holzer was the only person using this laptop. That was something that a prosecution witness said, Mr. Holzer said. That was something that was in the 404B motion. And so I note that only because in the abuse of discretion standard, not only can we look to the other factors of, you know, whether the court was arbitrary or capricious, but whether or not the court's findings of fact were supported by the record. And I just don't think that the record supports a finding that only Mr. Holzer had access to that computer. With no witnesses called, the court was essentially either going to rely on my stipulation, which I never made, my sort of a acquiescence or agreement, which I never made, or just basically what the prosecutor told him the case was about. But that's it's not really supported by the record to the point where character evidence, and that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about impermissible character evidence coming in to somehow guide the jury in finding ID associated with a computer, a tower computer, that didn't have any illegal images on it. Lastly, I don't think there's a bright line test, but these pictures were obscene, and obscenity is very difficult to show. So I would suggest that if pictures were obscene, and these are, that a person who's concerned about due process be able to waive the jury. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course. This concludes the arguments for this docket.